Blog Talk Radio.
Well, you may throw your rock, hide your hand, working in the dark against your fellow man. But as sure as God made black and white, what's done in the dark will be brought to the light. You can run on for a long time, run on for a long time, run on for a long time. Sooner or later, gotta cut you down. Sooner or later, gotta cut you down. Go tell that long-tongued liar, go and tell that midnight rider, tell the rambler, the gambler, the backbiter, tell him that God's gonna cut you down. Tell him that God's gonna cut you down. Tell him that God's gonna cut you down.
Welcome to Walls in Our Minds. This is Terry Dodd, and boy, am I excited to have a return guest that we've had on Walls in Our Minds a few times in the past, and it's always been some of the best shows that we've ever had when we've had Philo Jones of the Fully Informed Jury Association with us, and we're just really excited that she's going to be on with us tonight. And looks like my notes from my producer, Mama Cook, says everyone is on the board. So, Red, are you there?
I'm here.
I'm available.
Red, I'm available.
For the benefit of our listeners that are not familiar with ELO, would you give her a proper introduction?
Yes. ELO is the executive director of this national organization known as Fully Informed Jury Association. And she has been there now for several years in that position, and she has seen the ups and downs, but recently I think most of it has been up. And of course, it's an organization that I have, you might say, more or less watched over it from its very inception. And I like to think that I was the inspiration behind the creation of the organization. And it's been, you know, a really a great American story as far as I'm concerned. And so ELO is a very, very articulate spokesman for this organization. And so I am more than happy to introduce her to this crowd and this audience, and I'm sure that you want to keep your ears tuned because she has a lot to say.
Thank you, Red. It's such a delight to be with you and Terry this evening. Thank you both very much for this opportunity to visit with you and your listeners. And listeners, get some paper and a pencil because you'll want to take some notes this evening. It's true that Red Beckman was the inspiration for the founding of FEJIS. A couple of fellows who were young whippersnappers back in those days listened to him talking about how juries can protect the people and protect our individual liberty, and they thought about it for a while, and they decided they better get something going. So Red was, of course, doing many other things, but he has always served as one of our advisors, and I thank him for that. And now let me begin by talking for a moment, if I may, about the inherent conflict between a free people and any government that reserves the right to initiate violence against those free people in order to enforce its laws. I didn't know how you wanted to start, Terry, but that I wanted to talk about first. So what did you have in mind this evening?
ELO, you own this show tonight. It is yours to take wherever you want to go with it. And I'm telling you that wherever you go, we're going with you. So
thank you very much. All right, then. First of all, if I may, I'd like to give I'm not sure somebody's trying to talk. Maybe that's an echo I'm hearing. All right. For more information on what you can do as a juror, call 1-800-TELJURY. That's 1-800-TELL-JURY with one L. In numbers, that's 1-800-835-5879. Our website is fija.org. You'll find a lot of information there Remember that you have the obligation, the authority, and the right to render a verdict based on your conscience. Now, where we're going to begin tonight is talking a little bit about the conflict between free people and any government that reserves the right to initiate violence against those free people in order to collect taxes or to get people to do what you want to do. I'm not talking about law enforcement officers who respond to some crazed murderer or somebody who's trying to harm another person. We actually do have government to protect us from people who would harm us. That's what government's role was to be when this country was founded. But I think as we talk about this, you can see that the conflict between government and the individual in such a system where the government can use violence to get what it wants is, it's an obvious conflict. Government agents, whether they're kings or they're soldiers who stole the crops of the people or senators who enact laws which license other people to use violence to steal money from the workers or social workers who routinely kidnap children from their parents, often only to place those children in situations of the darkest nightmares, and especially those hooded agents dressed in black who break into houses of people who have done no harm to anyone, often killing the people or their dogs. All these people are employees of the government. They are government agents, and they initiate violence against peaceful, honest, harmless, free people using government license. All these agents prey upon productive, harmless people to steal our self-ownership, steal the fruits of our labor, and to strike fear in our minds so we will kneel before their vicious might. I think a lot of people are drawn into positions of power because they like to be able to initiate violence and abuse other people. I'm not saying all of them are, but a lot of them are. We are suffering right now in our wonderful nation, in our wonderful country filled with such extraordinarily excellent people. We are living through a time in history when our government is preying upon us through all of its agents, through all of its employees. At an earlier such time in history, the people caused the Magna Carta to be signed by King John. So I want you to remember that this is not new, this tension between government and people longing to be free is not a new tension. It has existed all along. And the shift of the balance of power swings back and forth. Generally, when it swings so far toward government, and government has so much power that they can just go out and do what they want to do without fearing that they'll be punished or held accountable. I'm talking about government agents because government is just a concept. It's real people who are doing these things. When it shifts so far out of balance, the people find a way to bring it back into balance and we would hope even restore some of those rights, swing it a little bit further over on the other side of that line and restore some of those rights that we have lost so long ago. So the tension is between the government's use of force to violate human rights and to steal from people, the very people whose rights the government is supposedly designed to protect, and these peaceful, productive people who only wish to be left alone to tend to their flocks, raise their crops, work their jobs, rear their children, and live in peace. This is a tension whose history we can trace back for our heritage to the Magna Carta and even before that time. Well, there is a peaceful way to work on restoring that balance. And we're going to be talking about that tonight. That peaceful way involves you serving on a jury and refusing to convict anyone under any law which violates the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, and the common law, the prevailing common law. We hear a lot these days about people looking for clever ways to beat the law, often through misguided ruses. Now, when I say people, I mean that to include lawyers and bureaucrats and department chiefs and politicians, but also sometimes we find really productive private individuals who attempt to emulate these government people who are trying to be clever, and they try to hide behind inferior laws as their shield of protection from prosecution, censure, or public exposure or whatever, or taxation or depredations from government. And let me state this clearly, because this is very important. If you don't learn anything else tonight, if you walk away with this concept, you will become the most informed skeptical juror there is. It is no longer enough to be legally correct in this nation. You heard what I just said. It is no longer enough to be legally correct in this nation, because as a juror, you can go in and legally find someone guilty, even if they haven't harmed another person, and the only thing that's happened is that some bureaucrat got their nose out of joint against this person. Our politician-authored laws are as corrupted as the lawmakers who write them. These lawmakers write, promote, and pass these laws. Look around you at the laws on the books, all those inferior laws that are in direct violation of the prevailing common law concepts of our Constitution, not only the Constitution of the nation, but the Constitution of the several states. They're all being violated by petty, bureaucratic, greedy laws. These venal laws are passed by corrupted lawmakers, or else invented out of greed for money and power by entrenched bureaucrats at every level. These bureaucrats write statutes and regulations to enhance their fiefdoms, abuse the responsibility they hold, abuse their office, and violate our human rights. You need to find out what all these corrupted laws are. And I want to point out, I want to say this very clearly, these inferior laws are most often as corrupted as the corrupt lawmakers who bring these laws into the existence. How could it not be so? You cannot get impeccable laws from corrupted sources. Think back to what you know about the corrupt royalty of Europe passing all those horrible laws, such as the evil laws passed against the Scots during the time of William Wallace. And I know most of you have seen Braveheart. You know what I'm talking about. Unspeakable acts against the people. Unspeakable. So atrocious that no one could consider them to be in any way the acts of a rational human being. And yet these laws were passed by corrupt lawmakers, enforced by corrupt employees of the government, and enacted by even more corrupt minions serving that government to initiate violence against the people to keep them under control. So I want to say to everyone two things, that you must learn what is the law, and you must learn your power and authority to refuse to enforce that which is not the law. And I want to say we're past the time when it's time to try to be clever and to spend time trying to find loopholes in these abusive, venal laws that violate human rights. It's time to simply refuse to enforce all these evil laws at every instance when you serve as a juror. Now, I know some of you may have some objections to serving as a juror. And if you do, then I would ask you to share our information with other people. And I would ask you to encourage anyone who's about to go on trial, to be tried for anything, to demand a jury trial. They will be threatened. They will have many threats thrown against them. If you demand a jury trial and you are found guilty, we will triple your sentence. We will triple your fine, whatever. These are people in positions of power for the ruling government who are making threats against free individuals to try to coerce them into giving up their right to a jury trial. Why are they doing that these days? Because so many people are finding out what it means to be an informed juror. I'm going to stop talking for just a minute, so if anybody has a question, I can answer it, and then I'm going to start talking again.
Just keep right on going.
Okay. Well, now that I've told you all of that, let's talk for a little minute about the prosecutors, the judges, the police, and sometimes even the forensic experts are all government agents. They all work for government. And so they often collude to advance their government careers and paychecks. This means that the prosecutor in that courtroom and the judge in that courtroom and the police witnesses in that courtroom and often the person who's dealing with the blood samples in that courtroom all get their paychecks from the government. And the government officials above them keep scorecards. They keep scorecards to see how many wins these people have. And so these agents, these employees, have little or no interest in serving justice. They have a great interest in advancing their career so they can get a pay raise or maybe a better political appointment, which usually means a pay raise. I want everyone who's listening to be very, very skeptical. Remember to always be very skeptical of all lawyers, including the judges and prosecutors who are lawyers, and all of those who feed into the justice system, including the police, the agency enforcers, expert witnesses, anyone who stands to benefit by bringing in a verdict on behalf of the government. And I'm talking here mostly about criminal cases, but not always, because there are a lot of civil cases these days where the government is a party to the action. And I have to tell you, for the last couple of years, and I'm sure all of you know the story of Diogenes, who wandered around with a lantern looking for one honest man. I have been wandering around looking for one honest judge, one judge uncorrupted by the power of their position, by their great retirement fund, often funded in part by the fines they impose upon people. I've been looking for just one. I believe that judge exists. I believe there is one honest judge left in this country, one completely honest judge. I know one fellow who serves as a justice in the circuit court in California, who I think is an honest person. And I'm looking for one more judge who's not afraid to stand up and talk about what needs to be talked about in the courtroom, and that is that the courts were instituted to protect the rights of individuals and to serve justice. And the jury is there to protect the rights of the individual against government. And this is true not only of the petit jury, but also of the grand jury. And we all know the grand juries these days are not independent, autonomous units of justice. They are controlled and run by prosecuting attorneys. And we're working to change that across the country. So all of these lawyers, whether they're judges or prosecutors, have a strong selfish interest to win cases and advance their own position within this hierarchy of the law. And the hierarchy of the courts is set up so that it rewards those who abide within the paradigms set up by the courts, reside within those paradigms of power and placate the judges and don't step outside the lines and risk losing your license to practice and make a living. So lawyers, as a rule, won't even talk about the jury's power to refuse to enforce bad laws in the courtroom. Lawyers won't talk about it because they're afraid they're going to lose their ability to make money by trying cases.
Yeah.
And when I say court, I'm sorry, go ahead.
My question is, you mentioned the prosecuting attorneys and the judges. What about the defense attorneys? Do they have any incentive to buck the system?
They don't really, because if they try to mention nullification, there's a high probability that they will be censured, maybe found in contempt of court, and in the worst course cases, lose their ability to practice law in that court. And by the way, when I'm talking about courts here, I want you to think back to what we were talking about earlier about this government that perceives itself as being some court system. And when I'm talking about that, I'm talking about royalty. Royalty were also government. Kings formed government, as we have many in many instances. We have presidents or prime ministers forming government today. And yet one way we know when government has become corrupted and unhealthy is that the officials begin to act as though they are royalty. They begin to set themselves apart from the common people, and they set the word of the ruler as law, and they enforce that word by initiating violence against the people. So right now, we need to become as impeccably honest, simple, and straightforward as we can. We need to understand what are the prevailing superior laws of our country and our states, and anywhere we have laws that are enforced. We need to serve on juries and come to the defense of harmless people whom the government would put in prison to serve as slave labor for prison industries. And I'm sure you all know that the United States of America has more people in prison in actual numbers and per capita than any other government in the world. Is this because we are a nation of criminals? Has there been an outbreak, some kind of an epidemic of criminal activity in our nation? No, because more than half the people in those prisons working for prison industries at slave labor wages are people who harmed no other human. But they got crossways of that system, that power-driven system. And so they were punished by the employees of that system and put to work doing slave labor. Now, remember, that while they're being prosecuted, government agents often confiscate much of their property and sometimes leave their families literally in the streets. So when you go serve on a jury, remember that this is what you are attempting to prevent. Unless that person is a dangerous individual who uses violence against other people, you have no reason to interfere with that person's life. Just because the government right now may happen to disagree with what they want to do and may enforce laws that are, again, these corrupted laws passed by corrupted politicians and corrupted bureaucrats, just because this is happening does not mean that you have to go along with the program. When there were slaves in this country, it was legal to have slaves, and the government passed a law called the Fugitive Slave Act, and I know most of you have heard of that. And it said anyone who harbored a runaway slave could be prosecuted and fined if they did not immediately, upon seeing the slave, turn that person over to the authorities to be shipped back to its rightful owner. This was the law. This was a corrupt and evil law. We have many such laws on the books today. It is your job as a thinking human being and as an individual to understand what is just and fair, what is ethical and moral, what is righteous and good, and to understand what is evil and destructive and predatory and venal and greedy. And it is your job to make that discernment when you serve on a jury and to refuse to violate your own conscience and refuse to convict anyone who is a harmless person trying to live their life in an innocent fashion who has simply run afoul, innocently or not, of some very corrupt and evil government laws. I don't want you to think that I mean that if someone commits murder, let's say, or someone commits a violent act against someone or steals someone's property, that you are to turn them free. I do not mean that. Because part of your job as a juror is to ensure that the safety and peace of the community is protected. And that's why we have jurors from the community, from the neighborhood, so you can make sure that your concept of safety and peace is the one that's supported as a juror. But when you see the government going against people simply because they refuse to bow down, simply because they refuse to give up their grain or turn their child over to government indoctrination camps that are often called public schools, just because they have decided to peacefully live their life and rear their children according to their own best conscience, you must not convict that person. You must not only set that person free, but if you can, you and your church must help them to reconstruct their life and repair the damage that was caused by the government. We have reached that time in this country. As jurors, we must, in the final analysis, answer to our own conscience. This is the peaceful, correct, and effective way to stop bad laws. Refuse to enforce any laws in any case brought before you if those laws do damage to your conscience, your sense of justice, or your freedom. And in this time when there's so much growing tension between, on the one hand, government politicians, bureaucrats, and those enforcers who operate under government license to use violent force rather than reason, and, of course, on the other hand, we have peaceful individuals who just want to be left alone to pursue their productive private lives, I think we can all agree that we are witnessing more and more open conflict with the violence that we're seeing being initiated overwhelmingly by government agents. There are people who are walking down the street and they are mistaken by the police. And this has happened many times. I want to dwell on this a moment. A young black man is walking down the street or he's sitting on a bench waiting for the bus. And seven squad cars surround him and they jump out and he's afraid because police have not always been particularly kind to people of his color. And so he gets up and starts to leave. He doesn't want to be part of whatever they're doing. I didn't do anything wrong. I don't want to be part of it. They jump on him. They later accuse him of resisting arrest. All he was doing was walking away. They beat him into the ground. They repeatedly use tasers on his body, which causes severe strain on the heart and can cause permanent damage. They do all of this because he's a young black man, and he happens to look sort of kind of like somebody they're chasing who just robbed a grocery store or a liquor store or whatever. He wasn't chasing. In fact, the poor young man is not even armed to protect himself. He has no illegal contraband on his body. But the police these days have become increasingly corrupt and venal. They have increasingly step out of line. I have a friend over in Idaho named Will Griggs, and some of you may read his columns on Lou Rockwell. He writes a lot about what's going on in this country and the abuses by our police. And remember that these police are working for these politicians who have vested themselves with the mantle of royalty. They are now above the law. They make the law. We are to obey the laws. So there is this growing tension, and we're seeing more of this violence. We're seeing government employees who are increasingly greedy for more money to maintain their jobs and benefits, and so they're continually enacting laws for more asset forfeiture, more fines and fees, and they're issuing more traffic citations. We call this taxation by citation, by the way. These government agents are resorting to more frequent and violent uses of force under color of law, and they're continually looking for ways to get more money into the hands of the ringleaders so the government gang can continue to thrive. But we know it's not working, partly because jurors, informed jurors, are refusing to convict people who won't go along with these corrupt laws. And that's, again, this is a peaceful way to just say no, to just say enough. So whenever you hear of anyone going to trial where the government is an agent, a part of this trial, tell these people to demand a jury trial and then work with your churches, work with your communities, work with your clubs, work with your homeschoolers and your private schools. Get the information out to the entire jury pool. You are not required, when you serve as a juror, to enforce a bad law which violates your conscience, your sense of right and wrong, and certainly not if it violates the supreme laws of our land, the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, and the common law. And let's talk a minute about what is going on, because we're watching a government that is no longer holding. It's not working well. It's flailing about. And we see it crumbling before our eyes. We see many states laying off hundreds, if not thousands, of their bureaucrats, of their government employees. And even as the federal government scrambles to militarize local law enforcement agencies, those local budgets can't support the logistical deployment of the machinery of war provided by the federal government. The federal government has run amok and is flailing about in convulsive throes, all because the members of the court, again, we're talking about royalty, not the little court in the courthouse, the members of the court know of nothing to do but threaten and bully and scream and shout, all the while stealing more of the productivity of those who have honest jobs and sending their employees out. And again, it doesn't matter if they're the lords going out to rob the serfs or if it's the Bureau of something going out to steal all the assets of some poor fellow. It comes down to the same thing. The thugs working for the kings are taking the productivity of the people who are working. And so let me tell you what the vision is here. Let me tell you where we're trying to go with FIJA and what we want to do. We want all humans to operate equally under the same set of laws. By this, I mean those laws that are firmly rooted in the common law, laws that have stood the test of time over many generations and centuries of common usage. Until we have this, until we have restored this to be a nation that is truly of law, where all abide under the same laws and suffer the same punishment if they violate those laws, and there are no laws that are capricious or corrupt, we will have neither justice nor peace in this nation. The best and easiest way to do this, where your vote counts for the most of all the votes you may cast in this, while you're on this planet living here, The best way to do this is to cast your vote as a juror and refuse to enforce those corrupt and evil laws. Because until such time as all people, whether a garage mechanic, a government bureaucrat, a politician, a police chief, a bureau chief, and even members of the BATF, and TSA, as well as Homeland Security, or a baker in Butte, Montana, until all these people are held equally accountable for their individual actions as individual humans under the law and are never, ever excused because of some politically created corrupt law which they presume, under which they presume to operate with some kind of impunity, until that time, this nation will know neither justice nor peace. If we do not restore the balance of the law and return this to be a nation of laws, each equally applied to every individual, whether that person is the president's prince or the fellow who changes your tire at the local tire store, until we have the same set of laws that apply to all people equally in this country, we will not have justice or peace in this nation. That is why I'm asking each of you who are listening today to, again, call our 800 number. That number, again, is 1-800-TELJURY, 1-800-TELJURY. Go to our website, www.fija.org. You knew it was three W's, I know. Go there and get information. If you don't want to have a driver's license or register to vote for your own moral reasons, then I want you to do this. I want you to get our literature and share it with other people. I want you to encourage people to have a jury trial. You can do this as one person, as one peaceful, productive person. In all of this conflict between greed for power and your productivity, because that's what it boils down to, doesn't it? Greed and productivity. In all of this conflict, between the initiation of force against you and your right as an individual to own yourself and your labor, you have this peaceful way available to you every day. Put some FIJA literature in your pocket. Get a few of our brochures and share them at least with your family members. Take some to church. Become informed, even if you don't want to be a juror, but I beg you to become an informed juror. If for reasons of conscience you simply cannot be a juror, then please educate others. Encourage everyone who is facing charges and encourage their families to stand steadfast in their demand for a jury trial. Refuse to bow down to the self-appointed royalty of office, which bureaucrats and politicians and other agents of government all claim, because that's what they're claiming. Refuse to recognize those self-appointed kingly powers of office. Refuse to be a slave or a toady or a victim of the machinery of government, which is focused on greed and lust for power. Become a juror. Become an informed juror. Be very skeptical. There is no reason for us to have the largest prison population in the world. There is no reason for harmless, innocent people to be losing their homes and all their possessions, not to mention often their families and their jobs and their position in the community and the respect of their friends and hunting buddies, simply because they do not bow down and lick the boots of someone who wants to deprive them of their rights because of some capricious and corrupt law passed by some capricious and corrupt politicians or bureaucrats. And I cannot say that enough. Know what your rights are. Know what the superior laws of this land are. Any law that violates the Constitution is no law. And when you go to our website and in some of our literature, you'll see lots of quotes from Supreme Court justices and other people, founders of our country, talking about what I'm talking about. None of this is anything we make up here at FIJA. Red Beckman did not pull this out of the sky and put it together. These are the rights that we have. These are the rights that were guaranteed to us because we are humans. They are guaranteed. They are our birthright. These are rights we have because our Creator endowed us with these rights. When this country was founded, many of those rights were codified into the prevailing documents, the superior law. And there were people who were concerned about that because they were afraid that if some of our rights were written down, the government would become so power-hungry and evil that they would try to take away all of our other rights. And by gosh, they're doing a good job of it, aren't they? Now, we have an opportunity to approach our problems and the situation in which we find our wonderful country. We have an opportunity to approach that with reason and peace. We can do that by becoming educated jurors. If you belong to a congregation, we have a special series called Challenge for Churches, which is available. We have one done for Christian churches. I'm sorry we don't have any others done yet. We're going to try to do those as soon as we have the funding, and we've been asked for them by other religions, so I hope we can do them. We're not ignoring you. We just need the funds. So when we get them, we will have one out, too, for other people. But right now, take those and share them with your pastor. Share them with a congregation. Share them with your Bible study group. Justice can be manifested by people of good conscience and good heart when they serve on a jury. They can refuse to convict. I want to say a little aside here right now, because I know some of you who are listening may be working for government. And I want you to, if you're working for government, you are accepting pay that has been stolen from people who are doing productive work to make that money. You may think you're being productive, and you may think you're being honest and helpful, but I would ask you to consider the government for which you're working and then immediately seek honest work in a job where you're not receiving stolen money that has been taken up from others by force. If you have a free hour, share FIJA information with a friend or neighbor. Even if you don't want to vote, you could stay registered to vote if it means you get to serve on a jury. Even if you don't want to serve on a jury, consider how you might save the life of another person by refusing to enforce some horrible law. And share these ideas with your friends and neighbors. Share them with people with whom you work. We have reached the point in this country where it's time to choose sides. I didn't say it was time to pick up weapons, and I didn't say it was time to go to war, but it's time to choose sides. And I want to encourage you, as emphatically as I possibly can, to walk on the side of peace. And there are a lot of points in walking on the side of peace. Educate everyone you can about the authority of the juror and explain to them why this is one of their most significant opportunities to restore balance to this nation's justice system. Encourage everyone to demand a jury trial and be supportive of them. Talk to their family. Help them. Serve as a juror if you can, and serve as an informed juror. There are some other parts of walking the path of peace. If you have children, I would encourage you to remove them from government indoctrination camps called schools. I would encourage you to support private community-based schools and homeschoolers. I would encourage you to help your neighbors so that they can avoid government social workers and government welfare systems if they fall on hard times. Help them find some kind of work. Be sure you teach them about FIJA, of course. Teach others, wherever you find them, about informed jurors and about demanding a jury trial. Spread the word. I'm going to ask you to simplify your life and turn off cable TV and read together as a family. Read FIJA literature. Read a founding documents of our nation. Read the Declaration of Independence. Read the Bill of Rights. Read the Federalist Papers and the Anti-Federalist Papers. Grow a garden. Go for walks. Make a quilt for someone who needs one. Serve as an informed juror if you can, and encourage others to do the same. Become very skeptical of what government employees say to you. They're trying to keep a system going that has become so corrupt, confusing, confused, and arrogant that it is basically eating its own tail. Evil eventually destroys itself. And we're watching that happen. So begin to step outside of that. Don't go out so much to eat. Eat at home with your family. If you're alone, invite your friends and neighbors in for a potluck at least once a week and start a new neighborhood tradition of kindliness and use those opportunities to discuss human rights, including the authority of the juror and the right to trial by jury. Take some FIJA literature to your church. Share it with a dozen people. Give some to your pastor or your priest or your rabbi. Stay home one evening and make some healthy soup with your family and children and enjoy it the next day. It's a family project. Learn a craft and practice it and share the things that you make with your talent with other people and encourage them to do the same. We're facing difficult times in this country. We must learn to come together in our neighborhoods as communities. We must learn to share. We must learn to go forth in peace and with love. Serve as a juror. Encourage others to be informed jurors. Learn to make bread. Share a loaf with a neighbor. Walk in peace and be informed. I'm going to be quiet for a minute now. So thank you for letting me say all of that.
Terry, are you there?
I hope we haven't lost him. Rhett, it's so good to hear your voice.
I think that Terry is probably over in the chat room or something.
Okay.
But,
I obviously have a lot to say. So.
Yes. Our harvest field out there, you might say, is so ready for harvest. The tea parties, for the most part, are Americans that are fed up. They're angry. They can understand quite well what you are saying about government and how it is deteriorated. And many of us, it has deteriorated dramatically in our lifetimes.
Yeah.
And we're very much aware of it. The Tea Party people out there, they need to hear this message. They need to hear about fully informed juries and all of that. Now, they are talking about our republic. They're talking about the Constitution for the United States of America. They're talking about sovereignty. Just 3 or 4 weeks ago, we had an attorney on as a guest who he was from New Jersey, and he is part of a national organization. And these are people who are trying to work with state legislators and teach how that state legislatures have the right to nullify bad law, federal law. And of course, this is something that is pretty exciting out there amongst the state governments and the sovereignty issue. And of course, the jury. What these people have to understand, when they get called for jury duty, they are sovereigns. The judge is a public servant. The prosecutor is a public servant.
He's their employee, yes. Yep.
But the people on the jury are the sovereigns in this nation. Now, I have taught over the years about the pecking order in our system, how that our Heavenly Father, our Creator, is at the top of the pecking order in
Definitely.
This country.
Yep.
And of course, we the people, we as individuals, are number two in that pecking order. And those judges, those prosecutors, those law enforcement officers and such, they are all under the Constitution because they all have to take an oath to uphold and defend that Constitution. And so when people get called for jury duty, this gives them an opportunity to really flex their muscle. If they understand what I've just said about the pecking order, if they understand that, they're going to welcome the opportunity to serve on that jury so that they can exercise their authority as the masters, as the sovereign in the system. And they don't have to listen to what that judge says. That judge, he will try to give his instructions, and never once will that judge recognize the jury as being the sovereigns in that courtroom. He won't do it because he wants that jury to be, you might say, just a rubber stamp for him. We have a lot of Americans out here today that are very unhappy. They're part of the Tea Party. They have discovered that just standing along the street or parading through Washington, D.C. with a lot of signs just doesn't make the changes that we need to see.
It helps, but it's not a complete solution.
I like their signs. Some of them are really, really have a message. But they need to be exposed to the Fiji message. They need to be exposed to the sovereignty issue and how that they are not to be. They are not to be subject to government. The government is supposed to be subject to them. They're not. They don't get their rights from the Constitution. Their rights come from their God Creator, and the Constitution was written to secure those God-given rights. People, you know, they say, "Well, my constitutional rights were violated." Well, that, you know, is the evidence that they have been brain damaged. If they say they have constitutional rights and they don't work for government, they have not been properly informed. They have God-given, constitutionally secured rights. And that's a big difference from what they've been taught. And so I'm just so optimistic at this point in time because I run into these people every day that are part of the Tea Parties, that call themselves Tea Parties, and such, and they're looking for sources of truth, and people need to contact Fiji. They need to get that information, and they'll have information that will make them more effective as they talk to their families and their neighbors and such. So, you know, I'm wondering if we've got Terry back online or. Is he still among the missing?
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Barely.
Hi, Terry.
D-Law, you can hear me. All right. I was talking before, but nobody could hear me, so I must have been muted.
You're not coming through very loud and clear.
Well, I hear me just fine.
You're very quiet.
I've got those 81-year-old ears, and so I have to have a little more volume.
I'm speaking pretty loud, so I hope you can hear me.
I heard you there, yes.
Elo, we have a couple of callers on the line. Would you like to take some questions?
Certainly.
Area code 313, Gilbert.
Yes, I'm here. It is very enjoyable. I was tipped off about your site and got on it this afternoon.
Good.
Could I read
I'm
one
so
short
glad you
paragraph?
Could.
Well, I'm glad I have too. Let me read one paragraph here that was filed. This is one paragraph out of a document to the Judicial Tenure Commission of the State of Michigan. No oath of office. Noreen S. Redmond has no oath of office as a judge for the 38th District Court of East Point, Michigan, to this very day. She is a quorum non judis, an imposter judge, a person who makes deceitful pretenses. This statement has a certification of the custodian of the Great Seal of the State of Michigan, Terry Lynn Land, as of January the 12th of 2007. After finding out that she, Noreen S. Redmond, has no oath of office and made public knowledge, she filed an oath of office on January the 31st of 2007. And she then ordered it to be backdated for 3 years and 31 days to become legal. This is clear violation of claiming jurisdiction she doesn't have in violation of the Constitution. Go ahead.
After she filed her oath of office, did she change and start recognizing the human rights of all the people appearing before her as secured by the Constitution?
Would you believe that she wouldn't even let the jury see prima facie evidence from the city of Detroit.
I would believe
it. She said it was not relevant.
Well, thank you, because that's one less judge I need to come and check with my lantern, isn't it?
No, she was not a judge. She was an imposter judge. I'd like you to qualify it properly.
All right.
Imposter judge.
Yes.
Now, the Judicial Tenure Commission covered it up. The FBI now has it. They're too busy prosecuting governmental corruption in Wayne County, Detroit, where our former mayor is in jail and more are following, that they haven't done a thing. The Judicial Tenure Commission has known about this since 2001.
Do you have a seated? Is there a seated grand jury in your jurisdiction?
Yes, but here we have something again. You made mention of the corruption with the grand jury. The grand jury is called by a federal judge who's covering bases right down the line. This whole thing is over the money that they get from fines and fees from the citizens called citation taxation. 25.55% of every dollar, fine or fee that crosses the bar, goes directly to the municipal judge's retirement plan. The other 14.45% of it goes to the legislature retirement plan. We have a corruption from top to bottom that I hope does not get to a book that I was required to read in the sixth grade in 1944. I'm born in April of 1930. This book is called The Daniel Duché Rebellion of 1785. It created such chaos in the state of Massachusetts and the eastern states, or the only states at that point under the Articles of Confederation, that they dragged the judge out of his bed, Springfield, Mass. Now, tied his hands and feet together, put a rail in him, took him to the county tar pit, dipped him in, and ran him out of town on a rail. Then they went to the sheriff and did exactly the same thing for throwing a woman out of bed in the middle of the night and confiscating her farm, took everything from her. Her husband had given his life in the Revolutionary War. It's a book to read. And then turned around, and we had from 1785 to 1787 a constitution put together and ratified. And then we turned around a few years later and got a Bill of Rights. We turn around today and have 55% to 60% of all legislators that are members of the judiciary because they're lawyers.
Right.
All lawyers are members of the court.
Yes.
We have such corruption from top to bottom that every judge I've given this to that's in private practice wouldn't touch it. I have the evidence. The FBI has it. Judicial Tenure Commission has it. The state court administrator has it. The state legislator had it.
There may be a way for you to get in touch with the grand jury foreman if you will get in touch with me through our website. I can give you some information, which we have found very successful in for individuals to reach the grand jury, going around, circumventing, as it were, the prosecuting attorney and the judges as well as the sheriff, to get information to grand juries. And
now,
we've had success in several states. Pardon?
What? Give me your 800 number. You said it very quickly before. I didn't get it.
Well, this is. I don't answer that telephone. I'll give you the information number again. It's 1-800-TELJURY.
TEL.
TEL is in tell. 1-800 tell jury with one L.
TEL-JURY. TEL, go ahead. Last four, three numbers.
I'm going to give you the numbers completely now. 1-800-835-5879.
5879.
Correct.
I'll call it tomorrow.
All right, leave your name and number. Tell them you heard me on this show and ask them to give your name and phone number to me, and I will get it that way, okay?
All right, and your name again is?
My name is Elo Jones.
Okay, I see it there.
You're okay,
the party
great.
That's the, yeah, E-L.
I-L-O.
L-I-O-J-E-O-N. J-O-N-E-S.
Well,
okay,
thank you very much for your comments, and let's see what we can do to help you get in touch with the grand jury in your,
now the corruption.
In your area. Yeah, oh, well, there is
the
all over.
The Judicial Tenure Commission, they're a branch of the Supreme Court.
Yes.
Won't touch it. Cover up and say that the Secretary of State is a liar when she put a gold seal on a document
I
have.
We're looking for an honest person in government. If you find one, let me know.
Well, I have one judge
thank you.
That way. And thank you very much. I'm going
thank
going
you
to
so
bed
much.
Tonight.
All right.
Bye tomorrow.
Take care.
Bye.
Bye. Is there another call out there, Terry?
Yes, sir.
Hello? Red, are you still there?
I'm still here.
Oh, good. Well, somebody should come back.
Terry is having problems staying in touch here. This gentleman talking about this corruption, that corruption,
yes.
it's just every place.
Yes.
You know, that one case in Tennessee where the retired Navy officer is challenging Obama and his eligibility. And state law in Tennessee is that a grand jury foreman cannot serve more than 2 years. And the grand jury foreman in that county has been the grand jury foreman for 27 years.
Yes.
And everything is rigged. And it's this is going on all over this country. And so people that are listening tonight, you better get active. You better get involved because we're going to run out of time to make the kind of proper, corrections. You see,
well, I like the way you – I like what you always say, Red, and I've heard you say this so many times. I now say it myself, and I try to give you credit for it because it's you're the first one who said this. If we don't solve this peacefully, we have failed. If we can't bring about peaceful reformation in our nation, we're not doing what we should be doing.
Yes. If we end up in a bloody revolution, that is the evidence of our failure.
So we need to get busy, stay busy, and get this solved. And one of the best ways, read your Bill of Rights, read the Constitution, understand the common law, understand the prevailing laws in this nation, and become an informed and incredibly skeptical juror.
If people would just stop and look around them a little bit and think of all of the roadblocks, you might say, that are in our way to keep us from being the innovative, the creative, the productive kind of people that we would like to be. It's not a good world out there. It's not a good time to try to be productive and such, because you're going to find that everybody's going to want to, and the government is going to want to share the profits from your efforts.
That's
and,
true.
I
thought I heard somebody in the background. Is somebody there?
Terry, are you there?
Do you hear me?
I can barely hear someone talking.
Well,
I'm
talking. James is online from Florida.
I might know who that is. Yes.
Am I on?
Yes.
You're on.
Good evening, Elo. It's James Cox here.
I knew who that was. Hi, James. It's so good to hear your voice.
It's so good to hear you talk tonight.
Thank you. James is one of our steadfast workers. He's a community organizer for FEJA down in Florida. He has just really revitalized the FEJA efforts in Florida. He's really working very hard. They have a lot going on outside of courthouses and other places. He's been involved in informing Tea Party members down there and going to a lot of Tea Party events. And hello, James.
Hello. You know, an English politician, one of them by the name of William Pitt, he was there, I believe, from 1766 to around about 1778. He said something on the lines of that ultimate power is apt to corrupt the minds of those who possess it. So, you know, I'm going back now to the Constitution, and there's a reason why that trial by jury is in there four times, because I believe the framers of this nation knew that there would come a time where it would be left to the juries to actually put the record straight, because there would be that many laws that were written badly just to steal money from people, which we have today, that, you know, trial by jury is, you know, mentioned four times in the Constitution and, you know, the Bill of Rights. So that was a good thing that they put that in. And if you go out to your courthouses, people, go and take a look at these. I call them Taj Mahals. They're huge. These buildings are huge. Surely, just think about this. Surely there is not that amount of crime going on in your city. And when I talk about crime, I talk about real crime. I talk about violence, somebody using violence against somebody, somebody murdering somebody stealing from somebody, or somebody defrauding somebody. They are real crimes. Not, oh, you were doing 70 miles an hour in a 50-mile-an-hour limit, now we're going to write you a ticket and steal money from you. They're not crimes, because there's no injured party. So, you know, these huge buildings, you know, they're huge. I call them Taj Mahals because that's how big they are. And Elo's right. These judges, they think they're God. They think that, you know, they are your master and you are the slave. And they're not. And if you do get called for jury duty, please, please try to get on the jury and vote with your conscience, because there are countless inferior laws, and these are based on the government owning you. They think that you are their slave, and you're not their slave. In fact, it's the opposite way around. The government works for you. You don't work for them. If anybody's the slave, it's the politicians. They do what we tell them. But there's that much corruption. The only way, and Elo's right, the only way that we can change things around in this country peacefully is on a jury. And vote with your conscience, because you are the most powerful person in that courtroom. And one person on a jury can hang a jury. So if you think it's a bad law, if you think that person shouldn't be there in the first place, acquit that person, and you do not even have to give a reason why. You can say to the rest of your peers, this person's not guilty, that's it. Or you can even say to the rest of your peers, I don't think the prosecution provided enough evidence. I don't think they did a good enough job. And it's only a matter of time, people, before someone that you love is accused of a crime. So you've got to stand up. We've got to take back our rights, because we are certainly living in dark times now.
Thank you so much, James. James is in Florida. He has a website, and you can go to let's see, James, make me say this right, for Fiji, Florida.
Florida.fija.org,
right?
Yep. That's Florida. Go ahead, Ayla, sorry.
I'm sorry. If you're in Florida or you're traveling to Florida and you would like to join him in his efforts, please get in touch with him through the Florida.fija.org website and let him know that you're there and you want to help. If you need to find out more about what we've been talking about this evening, get in touch with James if you're in Florida. He has all kinds of literature, and he knows a lot, and he will be happy to share it with you. He can point you toward videos and lots of YouTube things online and lots of websites. So please use him as a resource if you're down there, because he's a great resource. James, it's really great to have you on with me tonight. Thank you.
Thank you. They can even give me a call, Elo. If you want to write down my number, my name is James Cox. That's COX. And my number is 727-386-9192. That's 727-386-9192. And this is something that we have to do. It's the only way that, you know, peacefully we can take back our rights. And I would demand, I'm actually going back to court. I was changing lanes without using a turn signal, and they want to steal $166 from me and put 3 points on my license. So I'm going to challenge this, and I'm going to demand a trial by jury, because in suits of common law, this is Amendment 7, in suits of common law where the value in controversy shall exceed $20, the right of a trial by jury shall be preserved. And no fact tried by jury shall be otherwise re-examined in any court of the United States than according to the rules of the common law. So I'm going to demand a trial by jury. And because there's so much corruption. I mean, I went to a pre-trial, and the judge was basically bargaining with people. Oh, anybody that wants to change their admission from not guilty to guilty, come up here, we'll talk about the facts, and then we'll see what we can do. So the people would step forward and say, "I want to plead guilty now." Okay, you are doing 70 and a 50 mile an hour limit. The fine's $150, $96, 25 court costs, and I'll give you 2 months to pay. How does that sound? They were the words out of the judge's mouth, people. How does that sound? And some of them would say, "Well, you know, Your Honor, I just got back into work. It's a bit unemployed, and I'm catching up on some bills. Well, I'll tell you what, I'll give you 3 months to pay." How's that sound? It's absolutely diabolical what's happening. And I'll tell you one other thing that I found out this weekend, that when I went to the Nullify Now conference, and this, I heard this from a state legislator. He told me that the red light camera people asked Florida to have the cameras put in. And the state legislator said, we can't afford it. So you know what the camera people said? Well, I'll tell you what, we'll put the cameras in, and we'll the money that you get in fines, we'll split it 50-50.
Corruption has reached new lows.
Yes, it's absolutely disgusting. If you don't stand up for your rights, people, you won't have any, and we'll end up, you know, just like the Jews and the people in Germany and France were, you know, under a dictatorship. It's getting like that now, and, you know, we need to do something.
He's right. Let's get everybody informed about their authority as a juror. If you're all alone, if you're just one juror, you can hang the jury, and you can keep someone from going to jail. They have to retry the case then in a hung jury, you know. And often they don't retry the case because it's not really worth it to them. They may do it once, and then they may decide not to do it again. Now, if the case has had some publicity, you can bet yourself that they are going to try it again and get as much publicity as they can to make a point. They're going to use more taxpayer dollars, more of the money they get from us, to take this person back to trial, even if they know that the jury voted not guilty, 11, guilty, one, or in Florida where you don't even get a jury of 12 unless you're in a capital case. So unless you could possibly be getting the death sentence, you don't get a jury of 12 people in Florida under Williams v. Florida decision from the Supreme Court. You get a jury of 6 people. It's a lot easier for the prosecuting attorney and the judge to manipulate 6 people than it is for them to manipulate 12 people. That's one reason we have focused on Florida as one place we must educate twice as many people in the jury pool as in states where you still have trial by jury of 12, because there's half as many people there on your jury. So we have to work really hard to get an informed juror on every jury in Florida.
Absolutely.
I've almost talked out, but if anybody has any questions or comments.
I have a question, Elo, about the about the grand jury. How do we go about, you know, if we can, you know, if we have proof that some of these judges or some of these prosecuting attorneys or whoever, these elected officials, are corrupt, how do we actually go about bringing them before a grand jury?
Well, we have had some people in some various states who have had some successes with this by getting in touch with the clerk of courts. And in a couple of instances, they were actually able to get the name and address of the foreman of the grand jury so they could personally deliver their information. In more instances, they have been asked to deliver in a triple-sealed envelope their information to the clerk of courts, who has to sign for it. It then goes to the clerk for the grand jury, who signs for it, and then the innermost envelope is to go to the foreman of the grand jury. And it is not supposed to pass through the hands of the prosecutor or any judge on the way. Now, sometimes that doesn't happen. We've had instances where the privacy rights of the individuals and the privacy rights of the grand jurors have been violated. And we've done our best to expose those people as well. And I've been encouraging that those people be shunned, by the way, which, because I think that's an elegant and nonviolent way to treat people who violate human rights. But in some instances, we have been successful, and we have a couple of issues of our newsletter that talk about the grand jury and how to get information to the grand juror, to the grand jury foreman, or to all the members or some members of the grand jury. And we're working on more right now. We have a FIJA activist in one state who's just been successful in getting information to a federal grand jury. So we'll be having more of that information available on our website. There is some up there now. We have a flyer that's on our homepage. People can print it out. They can order them from us, but it's so easy. It's one-sided, print it out, hand it out to people outside of courthouses on days when grand juries are called. We've actually had grand jurors in New York, Houston, Texas, and San Francisco, I believe it was, who were given these, who actually read it, went into the grand jury room and asked the prosecutor to leave so they could talk with the members of the grand jury about what they were really there to do. And subsequently, at least two of those grand juries have refused to issue indictments against people when the prosecutor wanted indictments, because they didn't feel that there was any victim and they didn't feel that there was sufficient cause of any wrongdoing, any actual crime, to bring these people to trial. So it's
right.
Working. It's slow, but it's working.
Right. There's another thing I want to bring up as well for everybody listening and anybody that's listening on the podcast when this gets saved on the Internet. Find out who your state contact is for FIJA. You can go to fija.org and click on at the top there, state contacts. That's fija.org. And click on state contacts. That will give you a map, and click on your state, and it will tell you who is the contact person in your state. Now, if the number's disconnected or there isn't a contact, then give the office a call on, you know, the number that Elo gave out earlier. I'm sure she's going to give that out again, and find out, you know, who is the state contact. If there isn't a state contact, then maybe Elo could talk to you about you know, becoming a Fiji representative in that area. Don't be afraid. I know there's videos out there on the internet of Julian Heiklin being arrested. That's because Julian is fighting on a First Amendment issue, and he just happens to be passing out Fiji brochures. And the thing is with Julian, he refuses to move because he's fighting on a First Amendment basis, which is okay for him. I have had a few problems with people when they've contacted me saying, this is such a good cause, I want to come and help you, but I have a family, I have a home, I don't want to get arrested. If the police, if you do start doing this and the police ask you to leave, just leave. Go into town, hand them out downtown. You know, go somewhere else. Find somewhere else. But just leave. Don't be confrontational. Don't put up a fight with the police officer. You know, be respectful and just leave. I've been doing this for 5 months now. I have had a couple of run-ins with the law, but guess what? I was respectful to the officer, and, you know, I was not doing anything wrong, and that was fun. That was it. I was left there to hand out brochures, and that's what you have to do. We've got to put these brochures in people's hands and let them know that they have a right to not only judge the facts of the case, but the law itself, and if the law is a bad law, if you think it's a bad law, then you can deliver a not guilty verdict. And one person, it takes one person to hang a jury. You can't do anything against your legislator or, you know, the Congress or the Senate as an individual, but you can make a difference as an individual when you sit on a jury. And the good thing about this, you might be saying, well, how is this going to do anything? Well, jurors can nullify bad laws by refusing to convict people being tried under those laws. And when jurors refuse to convict, legislators and prosecutors know that the law is not supported by the community. And these acquittals and hung juries are politically embarrassing to legislators, power-craving prosecutors, bureaucrats, and most judges. They do not like it. But you as a juror, stand your ground and say, not guilty. It's a way of us regaining our rights peacefully and getting rid of some of these bad laws.
It's all about stealing
money from you. It's all about stealing money from you. That's what they're doing. They're stealing money from you, and the law is written by attorneys. These people in your state houses, they're attorneys. The majority of these people are attorneys. You go and look at these people in Congress. The majority of these people in Congress are attorneys. Attorneys write laws in legalese that you don't understand for their attorney friends. And I'll give you an example of that. Right now here in Florida, we've got this seatbelt law. You have to wear a seatbelt. They said you had to wear a seatbelt before, but they couldn't pull you up for not wearing a seatbelt. Now they've made it a law that you have to wear a seatbelt, and if an officer sees you driving without a seatbelt, they can pull you up. Where is the victim here? But what I'm going to say, what's asinine about this, is that you have to wear a seatbelt in a car, but you don't have to wear a motorcycle helmet? Come on.
Laws.
The politicians are doing the same thing with these campaign regulations.
Yes.
Can you hear me now, Terry?
Red, I've been hearing you all along. My ISP connection has dropped a few times, and when I've called back in, they've had trouble getting me on the board. So I decided, the heck with Skype. I'm the computer. I'm on the phone now, so that shouldn't happen again.
Yeah, you come through loud and clear now. But one of the things I'd like to mention here is that the conversation between the fellow in Florida and Elo and such points out one of the strong points of Fiji. I tried to make sure that when Fiji was organized that it did not become a top-heavy national organization like NRA. And that's why, or that's part of the reason why the state, every state feeds you is more or less an autonomous organization. And the national organization with ELO and Helena, Montana, it's not a big money-wasting big organization. It isn't that at all. And so, you know, I highly recommend the organization, and especially at this time in this these midterm elections, just notice the millions upon millions of dollars that are being contributed to Democrats and Republican candidates, and those votes on election days are just almost worthless anymore because of all of the vote fraud. And here, FEJA has so many things that could be done if they had more funds. And so we have to, you know, tell people, hey, don't give your money to a political campaign where the votes are probably going to be stolen or whatever. Give your contributions to FEJA. Because they're going to help you with your second and third votes in the system. And this is something I've been talking about for over 30 years, the fact that we have a three-vote system. It isn't a one-vote system where we control government with our vote on election day. We can do more to control our government with our vote on a jury than we'll ever be able to do on election day.
That's very true. And just in case people are listening and they would like to help support FEJA, if you go to our website, which is, again, FIJA for Fully Informed Jury Association, FIJA.org, and across that top menu bar, right next to the state context James was talking about, you will find Support FEJA. And if you click on that, you'll find information on how to make a donation online or mail a donation to us if you'd like to. We really could use your help. The economy has affected our supporters just as it has affected everyone. And I've been out doing a lot of talking on stumps and talking in the backs of trucks even to try to raise money so we can keep doing this next year. We have an increasing demand for information and for presentations about fully informed jurors, and we do need your support so we can continue with this work. So thank you very much, Red, for bringing that up. Again, our call-in number, if you'd like a free packet of information, you can call this number and we'll send a packet to you. It's 1-800-835-5879. Again, that's 1-800-835-5879. Our website, again, is fija.org. There's a lot of information there for you to go through, and I think that you'll find that you'll want to share that information with others as you begin to realize the awesome authority one individual juror has to protect people in this country from tyrannical government laws.
Let me just change the format here just a little bit. You know, back in Montana in the late 70s and the early 80s, we had very good results with our television programming and such, educating people about jury power. And we had a really, we thought it was very funny at the time. We had a plumber in eastern Montana. He was an older fellow. He'd been a plumber for many years, and he had always paid his license fee to the state. We had a plumber in western Montana. These guys are about 500 miles apart. And this one in western Montana, he decides he's not going to pay any more money to the state for his license. He recognized that this license is nothing but a ripoff. And so he quits sending in his money every year to keep his license going, and the guy in eastern Montana does the same. And they did it totally unknowing about the other one. They were not connected in any way. Well, the state plumbing inspectors, they didn't like that, and so they came down on both of them. They wanted that license fee, and they came down on both of them, filed charges against them in justice court, and they were both to go to trial about the same time, one in eastern Montana, one in western Montana, and both cases were dropped on the courthouse steps. They tried to bluff their way and tried to get the guys to, you know, they told them, well, if you'll pay for your year's license, why, we'll let you go. But they wouldn't knuckle under. They refused. And so the day of trial for both of them, the state had to drop the charges because the prosecutors, both of them, said, we're afraid that we're going to get a not guilty verdict. Now, just as soon in a community that gets informed about their jury votes and they start exercising them and, you know, getting rid of some bad laws and such, the prosecutors and the judges take notice. And they aren't near as reckless. They're not out there, you know, just collecting money. They know that there's people watching them. And so we don't have to win very many cases in an area. And it changes everything at your county courthouse and your county courts because we had a case where there was a nurse who was delivering home, doing home deliveries on babies in the one county, and the medical association or the doctors association or whatever, they were really after the county prosecutor to prosecute this nurse because there was some state law that she was violating. And finally, the county prosecutor, he issued a news release. He said, I'm not going to prosecute this nurse because if I do, the jury is going to refuse to convict her. And this is what happens. The people in government, they have to study. When they hear about the Fiji story and such, they have to go to the books and they have to check us out. And they find out that we are 100% correct in what we are saying. When we teach this jury nullification thing, when we teach this, the people have the power to reject bad law and refuse to enforce it. They have to go to the books and they have to check it out. And when they, because if they could find us in violation of the law, believe you me, they'd be prosecuting us. I've been doing this for over 35 years, and I've never been prosecuted. And so that's just another one of the things that happens.
Truth is a wonderful defense.
Yes.
Do we have any more calls waiting?
I don't believe we have any other calls waiting, but I did have something I wanted to talk about.
All right.
You've been talking about the government and the judges taking the posture and the position, the authority of royalty. I'd like to suggest that it's beyond that. I believe they view themselves as gods.
I agree.
I'm not going to quite accuse them of that, even though you may be correct. I have a pretty high opinion of God. So.
Well, God is with a capital G. I'm talking about gods with a little G.
Oh, okay. All right.
What I'm saying is that the ultimate goal here, and we keep coming back to the fact that this is a spiritual battle. These people want a one-world religion, and all of these religions, starting with the Jesuits, right through the Kabbalists that claim to be Jews, the Muslims, the Hindu, all of them are worshiping the same little g god. And it's going to be so easy for them to come together into a one-world religion because they've all already kissed the ring of the Pope. And that's just a matter of fact. If anybody doesn't believe that, you know, email me at tc.alpinedigital.com, and I'll be glad to send you documentation and show you the videos of all of them kissing the ring of the Pope. Muhammad's wife was a Jesuit nun. She grew up in a Jesuit monastery in a nunnery.
I see today many governments around the world trying to, including in this nation, I see governments and bureaucrats trying to replace religion that honors God with religion that honors government, that they want people to put government above God. We had a case in Idaho where a retired nun was called to serve on a jury, and she took the little oath that said she would take the laws given to her by the judge and, you know, render a verdict fairly and impartially to the best of her ability, etc. When she heard the case, and she hadn't heard the case, of course, when she took that oath, after she had heard the case and got into the jury room, and she said, I don't think they collected the evidence against this young man fairly, and so I don't think that this is even a legal case. And the jury foreman who worked for the county got very upset with her, and he said, well, the judge said that we were supposed to disregard that and accept the evidence that they found and not worry about whether the search was legal or not, and you're supposed to obey the judge. And this darling little retired nun teacher looked at him and said, I answer to a higher power. And so the jury foreman sent a note to the judge that this woman had refused to accept the instructions of the judge and put aside her own ability to think and her own conscience and render a verdict based on the instructions of the judge, even if they violated her own sense of justice, by the way. So she was reported, and the judge called her up to the bench and charged her with felony perjury. Listen to me, felony perjury, for he said that she was refusing to abide by the oath that she took to obey the judge. And she tried to explain that she was not trying to be disobedient to the judge, but she thought as a juror that she was supposed to exercise her own conscience and think for herself, and the judge basically said, no, you're not. And so the deputy prosecutor of the state of Idaho charged her with felony perjury. And, of course, when it was time for her trial, she had a couple of lawyers there, but we didn't think that they really wanted to have a trial because she had asked for a jury trial, and part of the evidence she was going to submit was a collection of Fijo literature. And so they set aside the charges and didn't fine her, but before she walked out of the courtroom, the judge looked at her, not to be denied his power. He had to flex his, as you said, his godlike being or whatever in this courtroom, I called it his position of royalty, you know, as one of the crown princes of the king, and he said, all right, just because you got off this time, the next time you're called for jury duty, you better mind what the judge says and obey the judge. You could be charged with this again. Well, they were afraid to try her before a jury of her peers because they knew that they probably couldn't get a conviction. But at the same time, you see, this judge simply could not resist dishonestly flexing his power before all the people in the courtroom and letting everybody know, I'm still in charge. Do you know how bullies do on the playground when somebody finally confronts them? Somebody's parent usually confronts them. And they start to walk away and they kind of hitch up their trousers and say, that's all right, I'll get him some other time. I'm not afraid of him. That's what the judge was doing. I'm not afraid of the truth. I'll put you in your place some other day.
Elo, where do we get our unalienable rights?
I don't know where you get yours, but I get mine from my creator.
Exactly. So what is the ultimate goal here? The ultimate goal is to put them in as the vicar, You know, you've heard the term vicar of Christ.
Yeah.
You know what the term vicar means?
No.
It means a replacement, a substitute.
Hmm.
Are you hearing what I'm telling you?
I'm hearing you. Yeah.
Anyone that represents themselves to be taking, like Red talks about the pecking order, God being
right
at the top, the people being next. We're sovereign as far as on this earth under God, we are sovereign. And they want to be the ultimate sovereign. They want to be the vicars of Christ, the vicar of God. They want to put God and us at the bottom of that pecking order. That's the ultimate goal. The greed, the power, all of these other things that we talk about being motivations and goals are really just to facilitate them becoming the substitute gods.
Well, that's what I keep seeing, is that they want us to somehow, well, if they ask you to give up your own conscience, and I consider my conscience a gift from God, if they want you to set aside your own conscience and be obedient to the judge in the courtroom, as this darling little teacher pointed out, she answers to a higher power than the judge. And the judge wants to flex his power and say that when you're in my courtroom, I'm the highest power in the entire known universe. And so you're right. That's what they're trying to do. They're trying to become the highest authority over humans.
So that's the spiritual battle. People need to understand the extent of that spiritual battle.
Yes, Fred.
One of the problems we have is one of the prominent teachings that we have in our Christian churches in this country, where the ministers totally misrepresent Romans, the 13th chapter.
Here,
and, it's a serious, serious problem. And I pointed out at times over the years where they say the first verse of Romans, the 13th chapter, says, "Let every soul be subject to the higher powers." And they say, well, the government is the higher power. And of course, we all know that government is a fiction, that it is people representing government that are the problem. And so it starts out and it says, let every soul. It does not exempt judges, whether they are district court or appellate level or Supreme Court. It does not exempt the President of the United States, whoever he might be. He is one of the souls that is subject to the higher power. And I say that you and I, as individuals that are not tied to the government, we're not government agents or government employees, there is only one higher power than us, than our God, for us. As individuals, there's only one higher power, and that's our Creator God. However, all of these public servants, including the presidents of the United States that we've had over the last couple hundred years, and all of the congressmen and senators, all of the U.S. Supreme Court justices and the appellate court justices and the district court justices, every single one of them, they are subject to two higher powers. And people really don't understand that when they take that oath of office to become a government servant, a public servant, they have to take that oath to uphold and defend the Constitution for the United States of America as the supreme law of our land. And so the public servant is subject to the Constitution by his oath, and he is subject to our Creator God. And so you and I, that we're not part of government, we only have that one higher power, and that is our Creator. But these public servants have two higher powers. And I know that a lot of people have never brought that out or mentioned it or articulated it, but I think this is something that we must do here in the future is bring this out very strong. We need to bring this out very, very strong that all government, I don't care if it's the janitor in the federal building or the county courthouse or wherever, or the judge, the Supreme Court justices or whoever, they're all subject to two higher powers. And we've got to stress that, I think.
That's a really good point, and it's one I don't stress often enough and need to talk about more when I'm talking with people about their role as a juror in our justice system.
Yeah, we definitely are the fourth branch of government, and by serving on a jury, that is when you act out that role by nullifying bad laws. Just bring that word up, people, in conversation with people. When, you know, they say, oh, let's say your mom says to you, oh, we're going shopping tomorrow, and we're going to go and have something to eat. No, mother, I'm nullifying that. It's just a word we need to start throwing out there so people will go on the Internet and start looking it up. If you go and type in nullification, it brings up all kinds of things, and one of the things it brings up is jury nullification. And people need to know what jury nullification is all about. It is very important. But you must get on the jury. We have literature. It's on the website. You can print it off. You can read it. It's in PDF files. And get educated. Even if you know, what I'm starting to do now is I'm starting to study little bits of law because, you know, you've got to be able to defend yourself. These attorneys can only say certain things. As Elo pointed out earlier on at this broadcast, that a defense attorney can't, in his summation to the jury, say, oh, and by the way, you have the right not only to, you know, judge the facts of this case, but you also have the right to judge the law. The judge will be soon banging that gavel and say to that defense attorney, come in my chambers right now, and, you know, we'll say
disregard
something.
Disregard that comment by the defense, they'll say, and then they'll say, please come with me into chambers immediately. Yes.
Right.
That happens. I want to remind. I'm sorry.
Because it's corruption. It's just total corruption. I just wanted to bring one thing up, Eli. I do apologize. We were at the courthouse, and this thing is huge. Look at your courthouses, people. These are huge. And I think Terry's right. These judges do think that they are gods with a small g, and these monstrosity of courthouses, these Taj Mahals are huge temples for them. That's what I believe that they look at them. These are huge. And we were outside the one in Orlando, and all the prosecuting attorneys are saying, this is not right what you're doing. People need to disregard this information. And we said, well, why? So, well, we can't bring up somebody's priors. We can't bring up and bring it into evidence that, you know, if this is somebody that's been walking around with a gun and he doesn't have a license from the state, concealed weapons permit, that we can't bring up his priors that he was arrested because his wife called the police one day because they were having a domestic to show that this person's a bad person to get the conviction. You know, these are the excuses that they're using. It just shows you the level of corruption that we have in the court system, and only you as an individual can correct this. Sorry, Elo.
Oh, I wanted to say this for all of you who are listening. If you decide to serve on a jury, and I hope you will, I hope you make sure that you stand in harm's way in this case, if you feel that way about it, but I hope that you will go present yourself for jury duty. There's two things I would like to suggest and recommend to you. The first one is that we have a brochure available, Surviving Voir Dire, which will help you get through jury selection and get seated on the jury so you can do something. And the other thing I wanted to tell you is that jurors cannot be punished for their verdict. And James mentioned that they don't need to give a reason for their verdict to anyone, and that is true. But I would encourage you, when you serve on a jury, if there's any way you can imply a healthy skepticism
for your not guilty vote, such as, I thought the policeman was pretty shifty, and I'm not sure he was telling the truth. Well, I thought the prosecutor overstated his case, and it also seemed to me that there were things the defense attorney wanted to tell us, but he wasn't allowed to. So we may not have actually heard all the evidence, but in any case, I just am not convinced, and so I cannot convict. Those are good things to say to other juries. I get calls here in the office about once or twice a week from someone who has served on a jury, and they have allowed the other members of the jury to bring pressure to bear on them because they were against the conviction. I had a woman call here not too long ago who was on a jury in California in the trial of a young woman whose husband had left and cleaned out their bank accounts and left her with two small children. This was a woman who had married, I believe, when she was 15, but had two small children and had no money and had left her children with her mother because she had no home. This woman and her two children had no home. So her two small children were at her mother's house. She told her mother she was going out to look for work. And this is a very sad story because she went out to try to find a job as a prostitute. So she was standing on the street, and she was approached by a fellow who, as it turned out, was an undercover cop. And he said, oh, hello. And she didn't really know what she was doing. This was her first time on the streets, as was later proven easily. But anyway, so she kind of fell into the whole thing. And then he, of course, whipped out his badge and said, well, you're under arrest for soliciting. And she became kind of hysterical and felt horrible, of course, and embarrassed and afraid, and asked them if they were going to take her to jail. And the guy said, well, yeah, you have to go to jail. You're under arrest. And she started to open her purse to take out her cell phone so she could call her mother and let her mother know what was happening. She was very upset. And her mother didn't know where she was or what was going on. Her mother thought she was going out for an interview, I think at a drugstore. But anyway, when she started to open her purse, and by now I think there were four policemen there as well as two undercover agents, she was thrown to the ground, viciously thrown to the ground, and suffered injuries. And she was tasered for resisting arrest and attempting to assault an officer. Those were some of the charges against her. There were many charges brought against her. She went to court. Her defense attorney was able to tell a little bit of her story, even though much of it was excluded by the judge as being not relevant to the case. I mean, I think it's relevant if your children are starving and you're homeless, but he didn't think that was relevant. So anyway, the trial was heard by the jury, and then the jury went into the jury room, and this woman really didn't want to convict this young woman. The woman on the jury who was a juror did not want to convict this young woman, and she pleaded with the other jurors, please, please, you know, she needs help. She doesn't need to go spend more time in jail and have this record and embarrass her children and her family. The other jurors wanted to get the verdict over with so they could all get home in time for dinner. They didn't want to be sequestered. They didn't want to stay late. One of them actually said, we need to get this effing case over with. I want to beat traffic. That tells you something about how the attitude of a lot of jurors. Of course, jurors are called, you know, under threat, and they're not paid much, and they're treated terribly. But I'm not excusing them. Most jurors are very conscientious. This was kind of some of them were a hardened bunch, and several of them were government employees, so, okay, maybe they were a little more hardened bunch. Nonetheless, the woman finally caved in and voted guilty. She went home. She told her husband what had happened. She was very upset with what she had done. She went to church a few days later, told her pastor, and her pastor said, well, we would have taken the girl in and helped her find a home and helped her with her children. You know, that's why we're here. That's why we have this church. That's why we're Christians, because we are our community. We are a loving and caring community. And the woman said, I know all that. I told them if they would just not find her guilty that, you know, I would take her home and we would do other things and help her. And the jury couldn't because the judge had given them these instructions. If she did, in fact, break this law, you must find her guilty. The woman called me, and we talked for a long time, and she was crying. She felt that she had violated all of her beliefs as a Christian. She felt that she had been duped by the judge. She felt that the other members of the jury who were
putting so much pressure on her. And there were only about four who really put a lot of pressure on her, but nonetheless, she felt the pressure. Were not people who should be allowed to serve on a jury. And she wanted to know if she could go back and talk to the judge and change her verdict. She felt that strongly about it, that she wanted to go back and meet with the judge and change her verdict. And I had to tell her that she had missed her opportunity. Judges don't change verdicts because of jurors who are upset with their prior verdict. They just don't change their verdict. They won't change the sentence. So while you're thinking about whether or not to serve as a juror, remember that this woman who was a juror could have been held up and supported and sustained through all this pressure and the lies from the judges, of the judge and the prosecutor. She could have been sustained in her beliefs had there been one more person in that room who had the same set of beliefs and understood why they were really there. So that's why I want each of you listening, if you are at all able to reconcile this with your conscience and your sense of justice and with your beliefs, to be sure that you are on the jury roll and serve as a juror. If you cannot reconcile those beliefs, I would ask that you educate other people about their authority as a juror, and that you also encourage people who are going to trial not to take a plea bargain, not to give in to all the threats, but to demand their right to trial by jury, and that you be one of the people helping to educate the jury pool so when that person comes to trial, they might have an opportunity for a fair trial. Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you, Ela.
I want to mention something I forgot to mention to you on many conversations that we've had. I was down in Miami, and I handed to a bunch of guys that were walking towards the courthouse the Second Amendment brochure, and they go in the courthouse, and they come out, and one guy, he hands it me back, and he says, "Why are you telling people to lie in this brochure?" I said, "What are you talking about?" And on the inside, it says, and I'm just going to read this passage, this one passage. It says, "When questioned to identify your understanding of the law or issues, consider variously stating that you do not keep track of political issues and that you can apply the law as instructed by the court. If asked, consider suggesting that you do not remember if you are a current member of any gun owner organization or other groups because you get too many junk mail memberships and solicitations, imply an impartial attitude." And I remembered listening to a broadcast with you on it. And I said, "Sir, if you were in Nazi Germany and the Germans knocked on your door and you had Jews hiding in your cellar, would you tell the Germans that you had Jews in your house?" And he looked at me all strange. I said, "Would you? Would you have told the Germans that you had Jews in your house?" And he said, "Well, of course not." And he was handing me the brochure back. And then he pulled the brochure away and he says, "I get your point." And he walked on.
Excellent. Excellent. I don't know, are we running out of time? Terry?
We have about 6 minutes.
Okay. I think Red wanted to say something a minute ago, and we all interrupted him, I think, or at least I did.
I forgot what I had to say. I'm really thrilled with the program tonight, and I want to thank you, Elo, for being available. And I hope there are people out there listening tonight that will, get themselves involved in this, because this is the most exciting political thing going on in our country today. And so everybody needs to get that, if they haven't seen that packet that they can get with all that information, if they haven't done that, by all means, get that and get off your duff and go to work. We got a lot of work to do.
We have. And let me give out those telephone numbers and that website one more time. It's 1-800-TELL-JURY. That's TELL with one L, JURY. And in numbers, it's 1-800-835-5879. Again, 1-800-835-5879. Our website is fija.org. I know we're drawing to a close, and I'm sure Terry wants to say goodbye. I want to thank Red and Terry and everyone listening who has kept me and Doug in their prayers this last year. Your prayers worked. We have good news. But I just want to tell you how much I appreciate your kindness and all of the supportive messages and the prayers. We've benefited from everything that's been done on our behalf by every one of you. And I cannot tell you how much I appreciate it, and I'm very grateful for all of that. If you're still listening, please get in touch with us and let us get you in touch with the truth and help you find ways that you can share it with other people. Red and Terry, thank you so much for having me on this evening. This has been wonderfully enjoyable. I'm delighted that James could join us from Florida. He's working hard down there. And I hope if you're listening and you have any questions, you'll get in touch with me or with James or with your state contact, which you can find on our website, and find out what you need to know so that you will be compelled to become involved with FIJA. If you belong to other organizations oriented toward freedom and liberty and justice, please put that membership in touch with FIJA. We're happy to provide speakers and literature. We also have videos, films, and PowerPoint presentations we can send. If we have a speaker in your area, we'd be happy to send them. Terry, thank you so much for having me on.
Well, you're welcome. And, we wanted to have you on a lot more, and it's wonderful now that you've gotten things squared away, that God's healing hand has been working, and that you're able to join us. And it's really good to see you so energetic and on topic. And I know that our listeners have appreciated what you've had to say today. We've been a lot of comments in our chat room talking about how wonderful what they were hearing from you was. And we want you back soon. And I can't say any more than Red said about how important this topic is. There's so many different directions that so many people are going, and some of those directions we've been trying to analyze as to the validity and to the usefulness of going those directions. In this case, there is no debate. Everybody can get on this bandwagon. Everybody can join in doing this. And this is something that everyone can do, and it's so important that we get people educated. And you're out there in the front line on that, and for that we commend you and want to support you in every way.
Thank you,
Red. I think we should close this show in a prayer. We usually started out with one, and we didn't do that tonight. But I think we've got about a minute and a half, and praying would be a great way to do it. So any objections to that, or anyone's got anything to say real quick, we've got about a minute and a half. I'll close us. Almighty Father God, there is no substitute for you, certainly not on this earth. Jesus said that hallowed be thy name. We know that in your terms, your name represents all that you are. And it is certainly separate and apart and above and holy and righteous. It is the source of all truth. It is what is good, because it is, you are what sustains us eternally. And Father God, we want to honor you, and may everything that we do honor you and lift you up and keep you at the top of the pecking order here. Not that anybody can actually take you out of that pecking order, God, but they certainly are trying, and we don't want people to stumble and to be taken and removed from you, the cause of what is going on in this world. And we just want to be apart from this world and the worldliness and the humanism and the Satanism. And we want to make sure that those that are around us hear the message. And what Fija is doing is certainly a part of that message to keep you at the top of the pecking order, Father God. And we just thank you. Thank you for being there, and thank you for teaching us your truth. It's in the name of your Son, Jesus, we pray.
George Washington.
Amen.
Thomas Jefferson.
Amen.
Good night.
Samuel Adams, first Chief Justice.
Thanks for the broadcast. Great. Good night, everybody.
Name synonymous
take care.
With the spirit of our country. Founding fathers of the USA. Over 200 years ago, they shook off the chains of tyranny from Great Britain by divine call. Citing 27 biblical violations, they wrote the Declaration of Independence with liberty and justice for all. But something happened since Jefferson called the Bible the cornerstone for American liberty, then put it in our schools as a light. Or since Give Me Liberty or Give Me Death, Patrick Henry said, our country was founded on the gospel of Jesus Christ. We eliminated God from the equation of American life, thus eliminating the reason this nation first began. From beyond the grave, I hear the voices of our founding fathers plead. You need God in America again. Of the 55 men who formed the Constitution, 52 were active members of their church. Founding fathers like Noah Webster, who wrote the first dictionary, could literally quote the Bible chapter and verse. James Madison said, we've staked our future and our ability to follow the Ten Commandments with all our heart. These men believed you couldn't even call yourself an American if you subvert the Word of God. In his farewell address, Washington said, you can't have national morality apart from religious principle, and it's true. Because right now we have nearly 150,000 kids carrying guns to these war zones we call public schools. In the 40s and 50s, student problems were chewing gum and talking. In the 90s, rape and murder are the trend. The only way this nation can even hope to last this decade is put God in America again.
The only hope for America is Jesus. The only hope for our country is Him. If we repent of our ways, stand firm and say, we need God in America again.
Abe Lincoln said the philosophy of the schoolroom in one generation will be the philosophy of government in the next. So when you eliminate the Word of God from the classroom and politics, you eliminate the nation that Word protects. America is now number one in teen pregnancy and violent crime, number one in illiteracy, drug use, and divorce. Every day a new Holocaust of 5,000 unborn die, while pornography floods our streets like open sewers. America's dead and dying hand is on the threshold of the church, while the spirit of Sodom and Gomorrah vex us all. When it gets to the point where people would rather come out of the closet than clean it, it's the sign that judgment of God is gonna fall. If there's ever been a time to rise up, church, it's now. And as the blood-bought saints of the living God proclaim, that it's time to sound the alarm from the church house to the White House and say, we want God in America again. America to stand up and proclaim that one nation under God is our demand, and send this evil lifestyle back to Satan where it came from, and let the Word of God revive our dying land. For Jesus Christ is coming back again in all His glory, and every eye shall see Him on that day. That's why a new anointing of God's power is coming on us, to boldly tell the world you must be saved. Because astrology won't save you. Your horoscope won't save you. The Bible says these things are all a farce. If you're born again, you don't need to look to the stars for your answers. Because you can look to the very one who made those stars. History tells us time and time again, to live like there's no God makes you a fool. If you want to see kids live right, stop handing out condoms. Then start handing out the Word of God in school. The only hope for America is Jesus.
What if the armies of the Lord picked up and dusted off their swords, vowed to set the captive free and not let Satan have one more? What if the church, for heaven's sake, finally stepped up to the plate, took a stand upon God's promise and stormed hell's rusty gate? What if his people prayed and those who bear his name would only seek his face, yeah, and turn from their if we pray for those raised up to lead the way, then maybe kids in school could play and unborn children see light of day.